Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Modo Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Modo Casino, the only app worth your time.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to the Goodish Girls, guys. My name is Dallas, and today I have with me one of the most amazing authors, Nisha J. Tooley. So thank you for being on our show. And before we do get started, I have to let you know that I've been doing this podcast for well over a year now. I've done a lot of interviews. I have not been this nervous in a really long time because there's a whole backstory that I haven't even told you. So before I started my podcast and I had just got into reading and kind of find it, like I was in postpartum, I was trying to find myself, I had started reading. And so I obviously did the ACOTAR series, right? So that's like a lot of jumping off points, because one of our other hosts gave me ACOTAR. After that, I kind of started exploring my own books and choosing my own like next adventure. And Trial of the Sun Queen series was the next one that I had picked up after Quicksilver. And that series was one of the big pivots and points in deciding that I wanted to start a podcast. Because as I was listening to it, I was like, man, what if I got to talk to this author? I have a lot of questions for her. What if I got to talk to her? And here we are. So it's truly a full circle moment. I'm truly fangirling right now. That's wild.
An honor.
So thank you for being here today.
I'm honored.
Thank you for being on the show. I know obviously Trial of the Sun Queen, like the Arana series, was a big part of who you are in the book talk community, but not anymore because Stormbreaker is here. And it is fabulous. And I think that now is going to be one of the big books that people know you from, right? I mean, this morning you like hit the New York bestseller list.
Fingers crossed.
So yeah, I was seeing it all over Book Talk before the publisher even reached out to us. And I saw the email. I had to walk around a little bit before I responded because I thought it was a joke. I thought I was being punked. I was like, oh, I'm being pranked. This is funny. But so welcome. So diving right into it, I finished Stormbreaker today. My son and I listened to it all the rest of today because I did an audiobook version of it because I really wanted to get like the immersive part of it. So my son and I finished it all day today just because I was like, I have to have it done before we get on today. It is based in Manhattan. So it's New Manhattan in New York, way in the future. How does one go into the world building of that? How did you go from, okay, I know New York, I'm going to take this New York and I'm going to absolutely turn it upside down, like tunnels underground, the wastelands, all of that. So how did you get there?
Well, I mean, the start of it was sort of like, what city could we use that's like instantly recognizable? And while it's not even a city, it's literally just part of a city. Like Manhattan, you know exactly what we're talking about when you hear Manhattan. And we liked I liked the island sort of, it went well with sort of the isolation of what that world ended up being with like water coming up around all the sides. I don't know, the tunnels were like, there must have been trains at some point, right? So like some of them wouldn't have collapsed. Some of them would still be there. They would have maintained them. They would have had to excavate them. And because we're like 1,000 years in the future, I didn't have to be like too true to what's actually there right now. Cause someone in another podcast are like, well, is this and this pizza place still there? And I'm like, it's 1,000 years. Like, I don't know if Ray's pizza survived. Like maybe his grandson opened up a pizza shop somewhere, but like, cause we're so far in and the world building was different because when you write, like when I did Artifacts, there's sort of like an assumption with like European-based third world fantasy, like you know what a king is, you know what a castle is, you don't have to explain what all of those things are, right? People just already know that, versus this world was completely like from the ground up, my entire own creation. So it was a big challenge in terms of like creating everything, being able to explain it all without making it too info dumpy and slowing the plot down. Mm-hmm. So it was like a lot of zhuzhing at the beginning of it to like make sure we were explaining the storms and the world and the rules,
right,
getting things in. And when I write, I am a pantser. Like I tend to like sit down. I have a vague idea of what the world looks like. I know who the main characters are. Mm-hmm. I have a vague idea of the plot. And then I start writing and then I build the world to suit the story. Like I kind of reverse engineer my world so that the things I need it to do in order to make the plot work, uh-huh, are what I make it do, versus a lot of authors will work the other way where they'll build their world and then build the story around it. I tend to do it the opposite way because I just like to sit down and write because I don't really know what the actual story is until I like start meeting the characters and I hear them talk and I uh-huh see them interact. That's how I start creating the actual book. So I can't just like, I'm not good at just sitting down and brainstorming ahead of time because I don't know, just that takes the fun out of it for me.
So as you're writing, is there almost like a movie playing in your head of the characters and what they're doing in the moment?
A little bit, yeah. I'd say I do keep a lot in my head. Mm-hmm. I'm not very good at taking notes. I'm not like one of these. With Stormbreaker, I did map out the entire timeline because they're at school for like 8 or 9
right
months. And I was like, okay, this like needs to be a full school year, mm-hmm, for the way I wanted it to go. So I had to like make sure, because there's some, sometimes had to be like 2 weeks past because I can't like, I'm not going to write about the mundane things happening every single day because that,
yeah,
would be a very long, mm-hmm, long and boring book by the end. So there was that. But then, yeah, I do tend to sort of like envision things in my head while I'm writing. About like half the book will be just me like word vomiting it out. And then by then I have a good sense of what the story is. So then I will go back to the beginning and then I'll start filling things in now. That's when, mm-hmm, I'll start like building more of the world and the background and the backstory, the characters, the visuals, all of that kind of thing. And then I will kind of go past the midpoint and then I'll get to about like 75-80%. And then by then the story is really solid. I know what the ending will look like. I will go back to the beginning again, uh-huh, and I will do that process all over again until I reach the end one more time. And then by then I have like a fully working draft that I'm not ashamed to show anybody.
Wow. That's a process.
It is.
That's incredible.
I mean, it just seems to work for me. I mean, took a couple books for me to figure that out, but like by then the book's pretty solid and I've gotten faster at the, uh-huh, getting to a more finished product. Like the actual drafting isn't faster, which annoys me, but at some point I guess I can only go so fast. But
yeah,
from the draft to final book has gotten a lot faster for me, mm-hmm, partly because I do have a better sense of like what kinds of things I know I'm going to keep versus things I already, like I've taught my, like trained myself to know I know I'm not going to keep this, mm-hmm, so that the overall process has gotten faster. And while that sounds like a lot, I mean, it does take me like maybe a few months to draft a full book. Like it doesn't actually take me that long. So,
wow. That's incredible. It's so interesting to see the different processes that each author has, because before I got into this, I just assumed everybody had a whiteboard.
Yeah. No, I love seeing people's like, and their stickies and their like lines and their, I would love to be that writer. I am not that writer. It's all
I mean, everybody's different.
I don't know, maybe a little bit dangerous sometimes.
That's funny. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. Some have a whiteboard. You know, you keep everything in your mind in little areas, and then go back. Right, like Callie Hart writes everything everywhere all the time on any random piece of paper she could find. Like everybody's so different, which is amazing that you guys can like put these stories together and weave them together. See. Sometimes I can't even keep 4 things in a row.
Well, it is always amazing because you start with this like messy draft and you're like working on, you're like, and I mean, I'm sure, I think every author goes through when you're writing, you're like, oh, this is garbage. This is crap. This is the worst book I've ever written. And then you go back and you read it and you're like, okay, it's not so bad. And then you start editing and then like suddenly there's this one pass you do and like suddenly you're like, oh my God, it became a book. Like it just like,
yeah,
becomes a book all of a
there's
sudden.
Like a moment. Like,
I don't know how this happens
okay
every time, but it just happens every, I don't know, like it's magic sometimes.
That
and even like every
incredible
book can be quite different. Like when I was writing Tale of the Heart Queen, mm-hmm, I was getting stuck because like it was the last book. So many things had happened. I needed to make everything. I had to bring all of these things together, mm-hmm, that I had introduced. And then like find a way to tie everything off without introducing anything new and make it satisfying and not make it 250,000 words long, because I don't want to write a book that long. And so I actually had to stop at one point and start like mapping it out, which is not something I usually do. But in this case, that's what the book needed. And I mapped out like about the first 60% of it. And then once I had that down, I was like, okay, now I understand what we're doing. And then I was able to finish it. So like every book can be a little bit different, even within your own process too.
That's so amazing. And so going back to like the New York area of it, did you spend a lot of time in New York, or like did you used to live there, or how did you just did a lot of research online?
I mean I've been to New York a few times, but I mean that was the beauty of it, was that because it was so far in the future, like I didn't have to be super accurate with anything. I mean it's easy to find information about New York online, like it was like
that's true. If there's any place that has information,
yeah, like the scene in Central Park. I was like, how long would it take you to run from one end of Central Park to the other end? Like, that was very easy information to find. But even if I had been there, I would know. Right?
Even in the scene. Yeah. And for our listeners, there are spoilers for this entire book in this episode. Like, just you should just be reading the book. You should have already listened to the book, and then you can come back and listen to this episode. Even in the scene, right, where she's running, you were describing it as like the one green area left. And I did not put it together until right now that it would have been like a remake of Central Park. I have been to New York one time. Yeah. For like a day. Yeah, because
it's a Central Park tree farm, right? Like, because that's where all the last trees are left. So even if it was like, I mean, I could have adjusted the size of it, but I did try and keep that one sort of true to what it would have been, because I think it ended up, it's about like 4 miles from end to end, which would take most people about half an hour to run.
Right.
Like a very fit person, about half an hour to run. And originally I had them like completing the obstacle course in like 12 minutes. And my editor was like, I don't think people can run that fast. And I was like, oh yeah, good point. Good point. I mean, like, I know they're all really well trained and like young and fit, but like nobody can run.
Yeah, give them a little bit of a break.
Plus there's like obstacles. So it's not like they're just running end to end.
Right.
So I had to adjust that a little bit. But
so
I mean, I think it was just... I knew enough of New York in sort of the sense of like how we all know New York, right? You see it in every movie, you see it in so many books and like that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and like, I'm Canadian, and like, I knew nobody was, very few people were going to read a book set in post-apocalyptic Toronto versus in New York, right? Like, I had to be somewhere that people were like compelled to read about.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple out there that I'd be like, you know, I'd like to see
maybe,
that.
But I felt like Manhattan would be an easier sell.
No, I think it was a great choice. And that's so interesting. So now next time I go to New York, I'm going to think about it and be like, oh,
you can think
this is where the tunnels would have been. And this is
a thousand years in the future. And actually my editor, she was like, I looked it up. She's like, everything you're describing could happen. And I was like, oh God, I hope not. Cause like,
that's almost a little scary.
I know. I was like, I was just making that up. Like, I hope that doesn't actually happen.
That's so wild. And so, you know, we have New Manhattan and we have the Wastelands out of it. In the rest of the series, right, like the next two books, do you see our main characters going other places or other reimagined cities in the future past the Wastelands that may or may not
be
there?
Well, book two is written. Book two is written.
Okay.
And there is some stuff outside of the city. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I'll accept it. I won't push anymore for this one.
Because, you know, if you got to the ending, you know how it ends. So, yes, they go from that and there's some stuff
They're out now.
Yeah, they're out now. There will be some stuff that happens. You'll learn more about where Rook comes from, what his deal is. And
he had more of a backstory than I would have anticipated.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And we don't even know a quarter of it.
You have seen nothing yet.
Wild.
He's got lots more to tell you.
Yes.
He's got lots more to tell you.
I can't wait. I'm ready. I need the next book tomorrow. You just send it
over. It's not officially announced yet, but I will just say you won't have to wait very long.
So later on in our episode too, I do have some questions. I did some digging and I found some dates. So I was hoping to see if we could confirm or deny those dates today. We'll see. We'll see.
So we'll see. We'll see. Okay.
We've talked about two of your books. You have like over 10 books that you have published.
That was book number 13.
Wild. That is amazing. Wild. And so now you are officially a New York Times bestselling author. So congratulations.
Finally, yes. Yes.
That is incredible. What are you feeling right now? Because as we're recording today, it was announced online. So like
yesterday. I found out yesterday.
What are you feeling?
Yeah. I was on the verge of throwing up all day yesterday. I was so anxious about it because you don't find out till the afternoon because they don't post the list. They send the list at like 3 o'clock to all the publishers, like an embargoed list. And then your editor, you know, my editor texts me and she's like, we're number two. And then the list doesn't go live until 5 o'clock versus like the USA Today list and the Indie Next list. They all like go up in the morning. So like, you know, first thing, this one you wait like I do. And so, yeah, I was just like all day. I was like on the verge of throwing up and I was just trying to do work and not think about it. And like, but I was obviously thinking about it. But yeah, it feels amazing. It feels long overdue.
Yes. Yeah, it's wild that it hasn't happened yet, but you know what? It was meant to be when it's meant to be, and here you are now, and
here we are.
Is incredible. So again, congratulations. That is...
Thank you.
So I can't even imagine what that must feel like. That is amazing. And it's going to stay there, right? Because it can stay there multiple, like,
it can to infinity, right? It can stay there for a long, long time. It could, yeah.
I think it's just getting started. Is this your first, like, YA series?
Yeah. So yes, it is because Forever, who's my other publisher, published Artifacts of Uranos when they picked it up from when it was indie. And then I signed a contract with them for my next adult romantic series last year. So they like, when you sign with the publisher, they sort of like get next rights to your next work in that specific genre. So for me to do something else, my agent was like, okay, well, Red Tower is starting this new YA imprint, we should pitch there. And I was like, yes, I've always wanted to write YA. And I was like, yeah, I totally wanted to do that. So that's why I did YA this time, so that like it could sort of exist alongside my romanticy work and my contemporary work. Because when you're like, contracts can conflict with each other, like this is the best way to sort of like make sure I can keep writing, keep like, you know, generating new books, making more money, right? Like I don't get paid unless I'm publishing a book, right? So that's
exactly.
So there's that. So yeah, that's why we went with YA. I had a feeling dystopian was going to have a moment. So I was like, I really want to write a YA dystopian. And I was right. I mean, someone pointed out that like there were three dystopian YA books on the on the list yesterday. Like that's crazy. Like that would, a year ago, you wouldn't have seen that. So so that's awesome. And yeah, I actually started out writing YA when I first started writing, and I thought that's what I was going to do because we were in the YA heyday at that moment.
Right.
And then Romantic came along and I discovered I really liked writing smut. So I went adult. And so that I went that way for a while. And I was like, okay, now we're going to go back. Now we're going to do the YA I always wanted to do. So, yeah.
And that was going to be my next question was, did you plan for dystopian, right? Like, as you had said, you saw it upcoming, you saw it was happening. And dystopian is having a very big moment right now in YA and romantic and all of the other things, right? Like in all the genres, I feel like it's very up and coming and it's kind of exciting. And it's new to me as well. Like the first dystopian was Daggermouth that I had read until I had read like your book. So it's very interesting to think about a world that is not quite right anymore.
No, I was really into the preview. Like, I loved Hunger Games and Divergent and Uglies and Gone. I went through that whole phase like 10 years ago when those were really big. So I had always wanted to write something like that since then. And I was like, I think the moment is coming. So that, and Entangled agreed. I was like, I really want to write a dystopian. And they're like, yeah, we agree. We think it's coming back too. So, that was where it came from. Yeah.
So going from like romantasy over to YA, are there certain restrictions that you have, or especially like with the romantic scenes, was it more or less difficult to write those knowing you had limitations?
No, I wouldn't say so. Like, I mean, you read it. It's like, it's also, it's upper YA, right? Like this is geared at 16 plus. So it is still like more grown up YA. Like I got plenty of F-bombs in there and stuff like that. And there is a little bit of, you know, there's some romantic scenes that, you know, are like, you know, so in some ways it was actually kind of nice because like sometimes, I don't know, I was feeling almost a little bit burned out on writing Spice. So it was actually kind of nice just to make this quick little scene that was, you know, only like two paragraphs instead of a whole chapter and stuff. So I didn't mind that. Like, it was a little bit of an adjustment. But I, in this case, I wanted it to focus on like the yearning and the, you know, more of them, like the banter, the slow burn, like more of that, like 19-year-old angst versus, you know, like more where it's more adult and like, yeah, so it's appealing to that sort of like her first love and that kind of thing. It was fun. I think my voice naturally lends itself well to a YA audience anyways. So like, I don't think I really had to change a lot of that. I had my Gen Z consultants help me with the text messaging and they were like, we don't use punctuation because I had periods and commas and they were like, struck all those out. And I was like, okay, sorry. Like, so.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm glad. It's almost like, like having a sensitivity reader, right? You got to have a Gen Z.
Yeah, a little bit. They were like, this is not how we like.
Yeah. To make sure that you're doing everything okay.
Trinity got to keep her punctuation because she was like, you know, a cop basically. So they're like, no, that's the right for her personality.
Beautiful. Like, okay. You got to have someone look that over just to make sure. But and you know, it was nice, I think, as well to get again a smidge of Spice, right? But then be able to go back into their story. I didn't know that I needed that. I didn't know that I needed that break until I got it. And then I was like, oh, I said, this is kind of fun. Okay. I was like, right? I got a little bit. And I was like, oh.
And I've seen like a number of reviews are like, well, there's no Spice, but I didn't even miss it. I still enjoyed the book. And I'm like, yes, we can enjoy them without, like, you know, I love it too, but we can enjoy them without it.
It was nice. And but, it really and it, brought me back. Like to when I, like to my first
love. It was
love.
More about, it was more about the, you know, the looks and the flirting and the, because that's kind
And like the
too,
feeling
right?
when like, they're gone, she's like, I miss him. And I was like, I remember those days.
You know, and that like,
I was like, oh, that's nice.
When you see him and you have to sit next to him in class. And
exactly. Yes. And you're like, he's looking at me. I'm looking at him.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I was waiting for them to like pass a note. You know what I mean? Like folded into a cute little arrow.
No, they weren't there yet. They weren't there yet.
No, they were not there. So wild. So even in this story, right, we had like the spice that was, it was just the perfect amount. The twists as well caught me off guard.
Okay.
In a lot of these books, I read a lot of books for fun and also for our show, I have this habit where I'm like, oh, this is going to happen. Oh, this is going to happen. Where I don't mean to guess the ending or try to guess the ending. It's just something that I do. And I tried multiple times and I failed completely.
Good. Okay. I'm happy to hear that. Okay, yeah, good.
Every time I was like, I didn't get that right. Good. Okay.
I have a friend who like reads all of my books and she guesses everything about every book. And she was like, I didn't guess anything this time. And I was like, yes.
Yeah. No. There was no guessing. There was, and I didn't, when I was reading the Urano series, I wasn't in that habit yet. So yeah. I was just vibing the whole time with Laura. I was like,
as a reader, I never do that. I never do that as a reader. I'm always just like, just tell me what, like, I'll go with whatever you have to say. Like,
exactly.
I never do that.
Go with the flow. I don't do that anymore. I need to get better at it. But with this book, it was so cool because I tried to guess everything and I guessed none things.
And so many people have guessed something about book two that is so way off base that I'm just like, so
it's not correct. Okay. All right.
So wrong about what they think is going to happen in book two because of something that happened to book one.
I have time. Okay. So yeah, there was, so like when we talked about General Soul in the beginning, I immediately was like, she's going to be a mentor. She's going to take Poet under her wing and they're going to like shine together. No, she's a bad lady. I was like, I didn't see that coming.
Is she, though? She might be complicated. You know how we're all the hero in our own story?
Oh, okay. That's a crumb.
Sometimes we're just trying to do our best and there are no good choices.
She's giving us crumbs. Yes. Say more. And then the fact that her dad knew supposedly the whole time.
The bastard. He is so, I had so much fun with him in book two because I love a complicated villain. Like, it's just like my same with in Artifacts when I wrote Ryan's point of view, like in the last book, like I just love a complicated villain who like often knows they're bad, but they think they have good reasons for it. And like by the end, you're kind of like, okay, I can kind of, you're still a horrible person, but I kind of get where you were coming from.
Right. Like, yeah. And that, you know, that was going to be another question that I had for you. Do Poet and her dad have any chance of being on good terms? Right. Like, I don't know if Poet can ever forgive him for what he actually did.
Well, I don't want to spoil too much for book two, but they do talk some more in book two.
Okay.
And she does learn a few things.
Yeah.
That sort of explain some aspects of his behavior. But whether they figure it out, I won't say.
What was it like as an author writing those scenes? Because, you know, we're not in a fantasy world, right? In the book, we're supposed to be it on Earth in New York. Yes, far in the future, but we're still, you know, you're still writing about a girl in her late teens who is in this awful relationship with her dad. Were you able to separate yourself from that emotionally as you were writing, or as an author, are you like in it 100% emotionally?
I tend to move in and out. Like, it depends on the scene with her mom in the apartment. Like, I cried when I wrote that one, because to me that felt so emotional, because they have that like moment together, a little bit of understanding, even though they hurt each other, or her mom hurt her a lot. Like, she also understands why she had to do that sometimes. And I think that's part of the like growing up phase of this book, is that, you know, when she starts the book, she's very sheltered. She's very like, you know, kind of in her own bubble. She doesn't really know what's going on in the world. And as the book progresses, and as we get into book two, obviously she starts to like take in more. She's growing up, right? She's literally growing up before our very eyes, and discovering and like understanding the world isn't black and white, that there's, you know, different shades everywhere. And and then I think when you're writing those emotional scenes, I think you internalize them when you're writing them, but like, to a point, you know, it's no different than writing a really happy scene or a really, you know, like a sad scene. Okay. Like, I mean, you internalize them both, because they're also like when I wrote Tale of the Heart Queen, which I cried like 1,000 times when I was writing that book, in the scene where they go, okay, the spoiler in case anyone doesn't want to hear it, but when they go, her and her siblings go into Heart, like, that's kind of a happy scene, but oh my God, I bawled every single time I read that scene. And I read it like so many times. By the end, I was still crying every time they take each other's hands and they start like walking into the city. And I'm like, it's sort of a, I guess, a bittersweet scene a little bit, but like,
it
like
was heartfelt.
Definitely. I know if I'm feeling it, then exactly. Right. I think that's too, like, if it's a culmination of a lot of things coming together, that's when I really feel it too. Like in book two, there's this part near the end where, again, where a lot of things come together and I'm like, oh God, like, you know.
So when you were writing her mother, as you were, as the author, how were you hoping that readers would perceive her mother? Because I feel like I went back and forth a lot. I was like, no, we don't do that to our babies. Like, we don't do that. And then I was like, but also, that's a hard situation.
And then, I mean, that's the point. I think it's that part of you is pissed off at her, but part of you understands also why. She wasn't in a good place either, right? Like, she was also trying to survive. And, like, Poet kind of gets to leave, like, she gets to go away now, and she sort of gets to start her own life, which I'm sure, as her mom, as the only one left behind now, stuck with this man who she can't leave, because this world is set up in such a way that she would be left with nothing if she tried to leave him. And so I think that's it. I want you to feel like sometimes you hate her and sometimes you understand her, and sometimes you understand, like, I had like one beta reader be like, why does she keep like forgiving her mom? And I'm like, because it's her mom. Like, literally, I don't know. Mom. You want to love your parents. You want to like have that relationship that you imagine you have with them, even if you've never had it with them. Like, you still think about it. You still dream about it, even if it's a fantasy. Like, I don't, especially when you're only 19 years old, right? Like,
right. Yeah. You've known them your whole life. They are
right.
You know what they're supposed to be.
They've been your entire world and like, you can also envision the relationship you wish you had with them,
Yeah.
And keep hoping that maybe it'll come one day. And I think if that never happens, it takes sometimes longer for you to accept that and sort of maybe cut them out of your life if you need to. But
yeah,
I don't, she's not there yet. She still wants the family that she dreams of, right?
She does. Yeah. Well, and the bad moments are so bad that I think it made her hold on to those little sliver of good moments.
Right.
And be like, I could have this. Like, it could happen.
Yeah. It's, you can see it. It's like there. Yeah. So maybe we could make that bigger. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So speaking of the name poets, the names in this book were top tier because they're adults, but they were also, you know, they're still late. They're late teens. Right. And they were all sheltered. And so they act more like high schoolers a lot of the time than they do almost like college kids. So we have Poet, we have Domino, Journey, Rook. Where did these names come from? Like, how did you come up with these?
Interesting names that sort of like represented like things. I kept looking at names that aren't really names. Like that was sort of my like baseline. Because I guess anything can be a name. Like all names were not names to start with, but things that like we don't typically think of as names. Because I don't know. I felt like way in the future, like were people going to still use the same names that we use now? Like, I don't know. That just didn't seem realistic to me. So like, while some people do have more like traditional names that you might find in our world, and other people have names like based on places that don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And this case, it was just like, what might names evolve into? And so I started like Googling things like names that aren't really names. And I just like looked up words to me that sounded like good names. And actually Poet, I got from a celebrity baby naming site.
Oh, cute.
Soleil Moonfry, like the woman who played Punky Brewster way back when, her daughter's name is Poet.
Yeah,
that's where I got, I was like, that's perfect. And I don't know, it just felt really right for her because she's like, while she's a strong character, she's also like got a softer side. And to me, that sort of like spoke to like, you know, the poet's soul, like that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so fun.
And then Rook just seemed like a cool name. Like I saw the name Rook and I was like, yes, that's
name.
I always say like, is it a hot guy name? Like when I'm naming the mate, the love interest in my, I'm like, you need a hot guy name. And I was like, oh yeah, that's a hot guy name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Are you able to give us like a hint of a cool name that maybe we haven't met yet in book two?
There's a character named Navy.
Oh, that's cute.
That's a she character. And I thought I like that one. It suits her really well too.
That is a very cute name. Yeah, I'm very into unique names.
Yeah, I just thought it was kind of fun. That's one of my favorites from that book.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm 100% here for that.
I mean, that's one of his siblings. We know he has brothers and sisters, right? That's in book one. That's one of his siblings is Navy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because, he's one of these. Yeah. So six total with mom and dad, too. So I'm assuming we'll meet the rest of the siblings. Yeah. Incredible. Okay. All right. Yeah. I really like names. I think I accidentally named my daughter like the new Ashleys of the world or like the new her name's Everly. And 8 years ago, I was like, I don't know anybody. I know Channing Tatum's daughter's named Everly and that's it. And now there's like seven of them on her softball team.
There you go. See, celebrity baby names.
Yes, exactly. So with our son, I was like, I got to think of a super cool. So his name is Ace. And I was like,
cool. That was one of the, I saw a lot that was names that aren't really names. That was one I saw
Ace.
A lot. So that's
a cool name for book three.
You're on the trend.
We'll slide that over.
I'm not done editing book two, so there's still time.
Oh my gosh. All right. I'm going to look, it's going to be another full circle moment next year when it comes out. So when you were writing this book, speaking of like back in high school, as I had mentioned, did you feel like you were back in high school or did you have to converse again with like your Gen Z generations? Because as I was reading, I very much felt, I was like, oh, I remember when the lunchroom was in different like areas separate. I remember the cool kids and the goth kids and like the music band kids.
Right. I mean, I think that's a universal experience, right? Like, I think that's when someone asked me, like, why do we all like Academy books? I'm like, because we all went to school, right? Like, we all kind of had that experience of like, the cool kids and the not so cool kids. And like, I don't know. I think to me, that's sort of a universal experience. Like, we've all seen it in movies. We've all seen it in real life. We've all read about it. Like, and everyone went to school at some point and had to deal with all the drama and the hormones and the, you know, all the things that happen when you get a whole bunch of young people under in the same building all at once. Yeah.
They're wild. They're it was really interesting to read. And I was like, it's been a long time, but I remember that. I remember being in that situation. And then like when they trash her room, like her area of the room, I was like, oh my gosh, mean girls
so
are everywhere.
So mean. I know. It was
literally
so
everywhere. There will always be a mean girl.
It's a cutthroat world, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was like, there's other things that you guys should be worrying about. There's literally these storms that are killing people on a regular basis. And you're like, you're actually not that cool.
Right.
You can't stay
with like
us.
It's like part of the commentary that it's so easy to sort of like let yourself forget about that imminent threat because you can sometimes get so myopic and like all the day-to-day things. And that, I mean, is part of the point, right? Like they've trained them all to think so much about these societies and like fitting in and like looking good to their peers that start to sort of not pay attention to the bigger threat. And I mean, which is of course a huge metaphor for everything going on in the world
literally
right now. So I mean, that's how it happens, right?
That's wild. So with the audiobook, because I had audiobooked it, and I try to audiobook a lot of my books so I can really get a feel for what you want the story to sound like. And when I did Trellis and Queen, I audiobooked that whole series as well. So I am a very big fan of Sunila Nankani.
Sunila's amazing, yes.
She is fabulous, and I am obsessed with her. Yeah. So hello, if you're listening or ever watching our show. So she voiced Lore, right, in The Trial of the Sun Queen. And she also voiced all of the female characters in Stormbreaker as well. Was that your first choice, or did you listen to other auditions, or were you like, nope, I only want her, like there was no question?
No, we sold the rights to recorded books, and I said to my editor, I'm like, I would really love Sunila, and they were like, actually, that's who we were thinking of too, and we were like, perfect, easy peasy, done.
You're joking.
She actually also did Not Safe for Work, like my first contemporary, like Sunila's.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she also did that one too, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I am just now getting into contemporary. I'm like dipping the toe in the water on contemporary.
There you go.
Time.
She did great. She was fabulous on that one.
Oh,
I'm not an audiobook reader, but I remember the first time I heard her do Lore and I was like, oh, she just like got the vibe so perfectly immediately. And then I did end up listening to books 1, 2, and 3 because that's how I remind myself of when I was writing each of the books. I go back and I listen to it at like 3x speed. And I make notes to make sure that I didn't miss anything like that I contradicted myself anywhere or something. So I did end up listening to them eventually because I'm not actually an audiobook listener. It just, I don't process it very well when I'm audiobook.
Yeah.
I'm an eyeball reader, but that's great. Yeah, she's fantastic. And it was so easy. I was like, I would really love this. And my editor was like, actually, they said this. They were thinking of the same person. And I was like,
done.
So that was like the easiest thing
It was
thing
meant
ever.
To be, honestly.
Yeah, it was meant to be.
And it was cool because when I started the book, I was like, that voice sounds a little bit familiar. But then I was like, man, maybe it doesn't. And then I looked into the very end and I was like, there's no way
it
was the same.
It's the same person.
She did such a good job that there was not a point in the book where I was like, oh, that sounds like Lore, or that sounds like the other, like the,
oh,
one
good,
of the other
good. I haven't listened, I haven't heard it yet, so that's good to hear. I'm glad to hear
she
it.
She did such a good job. It was fabulous.
That's awesome.
Yeah, when you listen to it, you're going to be like, oh, this is a brand new character. In the book, we hear everything from poet's point of view. In book 2, is that the same structure that you have going, or are we introducing any of like Rook's POV?
Yeah, it's just hers in book 2. I think book 3, I will have to split them up. Maybe.
Okay.
Structure, but
are we thinking of the same, like, so Corvin King did Prince Nadir. Are we thinking we're going that direction maybe as a hope? I know that's like
did
obviously a little bit farther away.
There are some Rook bonus chapters in the hardcover edition. Did they do them on the audio? I know they were talking about it, but I don't know
did
if they,
did
in the end.
Oh, now I'm
going
to look because it didn't say anything.
I don't know if they did in the end.
I don't think they did in the audiobook one.
Okay.
I'm double checking on my phone right now.
In the hardcover, there are 2 bonus chapters. And in the ebook, there's actually a 3rd different bonus chapter.
Oh, okay. Now we know that there's some bonus chapters out there. Yeah, no, they did not do that on Audible. And even on Audible, it just says her name. It doesn't say any other people's names.
So I guess they didn't in the end. Yeah, I don't know who, if we do end up doing a second POV, I'm not sure who would be. Corbin was great too. He was fantastic as Nadir. So yeah, I would totally work with him again. He was
that would be a good one. I think that'd be a good, I mean, there's lots of other like amazing audiobook narrators.
I mean, yeah, there's
a
million out there.
Really? Yeah, I was just wondering. I was like, he was just going to go the same direction. Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for the bonus chapters now. The story, the single POV works the best because I need her not to know everything yet. And I need the audience not to know everything yet, which is why, for me, that worked. But yeah.
I also feel like that was refreshing as well, right? Just like the lack of spice. Read that I'm used to, I think not knowing what our MMC was thinking and or doing was also super refreshing.
Right. And then every time you see him, you're like, oh, there he is.
I'm like, oh, he's back. Yay. I was like, where are you going?
I remember after my first one, my editor, she's like, we need more Rook. She's like, more Rook. And I'm like, okay, I'll put in more. And like, introduce him sooner. And like, because originally he gets introduced in that first cafeteria scene. And she's like, sooner. So I introduced him in that, like, in the seat, very first scene when they're all
we were
going
to have to wait a long time.
Yeah, you were going to have to wait a bit longer, but in the end, that was a better choice. I was like, of course he would appear, like, and then I got to do the Aragorn door sweeping open moment.
Oh,
there
that's so funny. Wow. It's crazy to find out the things that happen behind the scenes of like what it could have been or what it almost was.
All along the way, yeah.
Yeah, we would have to wait. Oh, that
more Rook.
Thank you to
more Rook earlier. You. And I was like, yeah, okay, good point. Good point.
Yeah, just have him walk by. There he goes.
Yeah, just have him.
There he is.
Hey, ladies. Yeah.
Just grab the
tattoos. You'll get lots and lots of him in book two.
We just did a little fix of Rook every once in a while.
Yeah.
So this is a trilogy as far as I have found online. Is that correct?
Well, okay. So it was originally supposed to be a duology. But then when Amazon picked up the rights, that sort of changed things. So
okay,
TBD. I've currently written the second book so that it sort of like ends. It ends on a cliffhanger with a new thread introduced, so it could be a third book, or we could end it because dystopian series either end with them bringing down the system, or it ends with them sort of like leaving and starting their own sort of utopia and leaving the bad people
interesting.
Behind. Right,
okay,
like that's sort of how dystopian books series tend to end. So I could, you know, like there's sort of an opportunity to do that. The way I've constructed it right now, I think it'll probably be 3 books, but we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. TBD.
Interesting. So as well in my sleuthing online, I am seeing September 1st of this year for book two. How solid is that date?
I will say unofficially, it's pretty solid. Officially, I'd say nothing.
Okay.
The official announcement should
come very
soon. My
source was Amazon. That is helpful. Amazon's like, it's coming out September 1st.
Come very soon. Yeah. The official thing will come very soon.
Yeah. They're out there dropping all sorts of stuff.
I know. It's like, keep this secret, but we're going to post it everywhere. I'm like, all right.
Yeah. We're actually
going to
put it online. But you can't say anything. So
it is fully done and written is all I have to say. So
cover wise and or title wise,
there is a cover and there is a title. I absolutely have a cover and a title. Yes.
A cover and a title.
It's beautiful and it's going to look so good next time.
Can we see it? I have had authors drop title reveals on this show. So if you want.
I might get in trouble.
I don't want to get in trouble. That's all right. That's all right. So
these things do exist. So it's a good sign. It's a good sign.
People are excited. I'm excited. And I'm trying to think of like my own guesses of what the name would be. And I'm not doing very well. So I'm not going to tell you any of my guesses.
Oh.
Because I think that.
I do want to hear your guesses.
They're so bad. Like Storm Ruiner or like something cool like that. I don't know.
It is Storm something. You're right. That's right.
Storm Crusher. Storm. Because it can't be Stormbreaker, obviously, because like that's the first one. I don't know.
Stormcrusher.
Stormcrusher. Yeah, I was like, what could it be? What is book two named? But at least I have the first word right. I think they have like
it is
Wordle apps for that, right?
It is Storm something, yeah. Yes.
So book tour-wise, you obviously said you live in Canada. You are not in the United States. Is there any possibility in the future for book two where you might do a US-based tour where you're going to come to this side and hang out
with
us?
Yes, I think we will do a tour for book two. I didn't end up doing one for book one for a few reasons, just because I was working on book two.
Yeah.
And it was pretty, we had to get it done. And yeah, so yes, I think there will be a tour for book
okay,
two.
All right. That's exciting. People are very much into book tours right now. They
yeah,
love them.
I mean, I love doing tours. They're super fun. I mean, they're very tiring and very like exhausting.
I'm sure.
But they're also like very, like they fill your heart because they're just like everyone's so happy to see you, and it's just like, so they're I love doing them, and yeah.
Yes, I love that. Well, when you do, we're in Orlando, so if you come to the
Orlando
area,
okay. Good to know.
We have nice weather. Tell Joanne. Okay.
I think it probably will be a lot because there's been a few bookstores that have like reached out and said, will you please come? And I think they're sort of more along that side. So,
oh, yeah, we have so many good indie stores here.
Yeah,
I mean, we have the big box stores too, right? But yeah, there's a lot of really good ones that have.
Tours I tend to do better with indies.
I feel like you get more out of it when you go to an indie store because you, like, we did one a couple weeks ago. And the store owners, the independent store owners were so kind, and they made sure everything was perfect, and they were like so courteous, and it was so welcoming, which is incredible.
Yeah, and it's just like great for them. They can sell like 100 books in a night, and like, you know.
So I know, circling back around, you on Amazon, and obviously we know now that their information is maybe correct, maybe not correct. They just be dropping lore out there. This has been optioned for television by Amazon MGM Studios. And as far as I have found out, they got the draft. They loved it, right? I saw on another podcast that you were on that, like, they read a bunch of pages in their car and it was fabulous. And they have info for book two. Do we have any updates past that point? Have you heard anything that you are able to share with us now?
Nothing confirmed yet. I think I mentioned on the podcast I have met with a writer, and I think they're working on their thing over on that side.
Mm-hmm.
So because the next step now is sort of to sort of get the writer in place, gather all the, like, basically storyboard, like what a first season would look like, what a second season would look like, figure out the budgeting and all that kind of stuff. And then they present all of that to Amazon, mm-hmm. who then decides to greenlight it or not. And then if they greenlight it, then it officially becomes a show. So there is like lots. So the first thing is the option. And then the second is development, which is what they're doing right now, which is a very good sign that we're in development. Like that most things never leave the option phase. So it's very good that we're already in development. Like that's already like a huge hurdle. And then the next is the green light. So we'll see. They said maybe by the end of the year, we'll know for sure if it gets greenlit or not. But that could be, who knows? Like
it's wild for how many shows they put out, how long it takes them to do
but
things.
I mean, I think these things, start years ahead before you ever see them, right? So, like, it's just...
Yeah.
And, I mean, books are like that, too, but I think even... it seems like book, TV, and movies are even longer, but, so I don't know. I mean, I'm cautiously excited, but there are still some steps to go, but, I mean, it has to start somewhere, so, we'll see. Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, it really does. It's so incredible, though, and I think it would be such a good TV show.
Yeah,
honestly.
I think visually there would be, like, so many fun things.
Yeah,
like visually, I think, which is, I think, part of why they were so drawn to it. They loved the sort of like the Venice in New York kind of aspect that like with the canals and stuff like that. I think that visually they really thought on screen that will look amazing and like purple and the
exactly. Yeah. How involved are you going to get to be in the actual like production and casting things like that as the author?
I don't actually really know yet. I know they said, like, once a script is written, I will get to see it. And, like, we can, if there's anything in there that I'm really don't like or I'm, you know, think is missing or blah, blah, they said, we'll take your feedback. Like, you might get overruled because of budget concerns. You know, like, in the end, it's going to come down to certain things that I don't have much say on. Like, I think, I don't really know yet. I mean, I'm not going to be cut out of it, but, like, I also am not going to, like, get to dictate stuff or anything.
Yeah, that's
great. Yeah, like, I mean, whatever, I'm along for this ride. I'm just happy if it happens. And
so do you have in a perfect world, right, like, let's say you got to choose and they were like, Nisha, who are you casting?
I don't know. I'm so bad at this. I'm so bad at, like, famous people. I don't know.
That's fair. That's okay.
I have absolutely no idea.
I don't have any guesses either.
I assume it'd be like some more like, you know, unknown actors who are like up and coming. I mean, they'd have to be pretty young to like play the characters. Yeah, I have no idea. Like, yeah.
Honestly, well, and it's kind of nice too when it is a new actor or actress because you don't automatically put their face to something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And yeah. Then, I would assume they would probably pick some like young new faces, right? Like,
yeah. I would think so.
I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know any of the decisions that they make behind the scenes on crazy stuff. I'm like, well, that sounds good. I like watching this show. So
sure, sounds good.
That's
and
funny.
Like, I know nothing about this world. Like, I am just learning everything as I go too. So it's been very a big, like,
yeah, I'm yeah, sure
all these new terms and new words and all these new concepts. I'm like, oh my God, this is like,
but it's so exciting though.
You have to learn publishing and now I have to learn a whole other industry.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's super exciting. It's
as long as you have the right support team behind you helping you, hopefully it's more of an exciting and fun process than like a stressful process for you.
I think it will be. I mean, I don't know.
It's going to be amazing.
Whatever, if I get a TV show out of it, I'll deal with it.
Yeah. And so another question. So with this, because Amazon and MGM Studios have the rights to put on television, does that include like the rights for licensing for merchandise? Like, does that include that or is that still yours?
The merch licensing for the merch belongs to the publisher in my case, because that's how they work their contracts. And I believe, I'm not entirely sure. I think there's some provision like the merch licensing goes over to them once the show actually goes on.
Okay.
In the meantime, we have the merchandise licensing and then up until then. So I think there's like some different, there's a bunch of different scenarios in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. The reason I'm asking because I want a Stormbreaker sweatshirt. So.
Yeah. Well, then you would reach out to my publisher and they would be able to like, yeah, whoever.
Yeah. I wonder if that's like somewhere in their plans is if they're like thinking about.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, sometimes you do some like. I don't know. Sometimes merch shows up for books and then sometimes it doesn't.
Entangled runs a bit differently than other publishers. Like they like consider the whole package and the whole picture. Like
that's fair.
You know,
yeah, that's
in a
true.
Way that a lot of other publishers don't, which is one reason I really wanted to work with them because they do things like very differently than anyone else is doing. So, yeah, I would expect that they're on that.
When I email and be like, our interview was great. If you have any licensing merch, I would like to buy some. So, yes, I'm a merch collector. I'm a merch hog. Well, this has been so much fun. Yeah. I truly cannot tell you how much this means to me. I'm so grateful to get to chat with you today and talk with you and kind of pick your brain a little bit. So thank you for letting me ask all my wild questions. I hope they weren't too crazy.
No. Thank you for having me.
This was so much fun. Hopefully everyone that is listening to this episode has read Stormbreaker. If not, you know a lot that's happening. And I hope you're okay with spoilers.
Yeah,
if
we didn't give too many spoilers, but it might be.
just a couple little things,
yeah,
but also some
bit.
Things that
we didn't
know.
Give too many.
Right. So if you audiobooked it, now we all need to go get the physical copy so we can get the bonus chapters that
you
I
do.
Didn't
You
know
need
existed.
To read the bonus chapters. One of them is related to Teddy.
Oh, yeah. At first, when I was looking through like your page and about the book, there was a teddy bear. And I was like, what is this teddy bear happening? What is happening? And then once I got into the story, I was like, that's very sweet.
Teddy's based on my son's Teddy. So I made him famous.
Oh, that's cute. But how did your son feel about that?
He's very happy about it.
He
Yay! About it. And
Teddy is your
usually
son's
wears
Teddy
a
named
sweater.
Teddy?
Yeah, his Teddy's name is Teddy, and he normally wears a knit sweater. But he doesn't wear one in the book. But because my mom is a knitter, and so she has knit Teddy a purple sweater now. He's like, he needs a purple sweater to go.
Oh
with
yes,
book,
of
so
course.
He's gonna get his purple sweater soon. So then I'll take a picture of him with the purple
that
sweater.
That is so cute. Yes, I can't wait to see it. Yeah, when I was reading it, I looked and I was like, there it is. There's the bear. Because I saw
teddy,
the like the necklace
there's
that you have on your page. And I was like, what does this mean?
What is with this bear?
And now I know. I'm inside the loop now. I know what it means.
Find out what the bear is about, yes.
Yes, I know
and
what
one
the
of the
bear
bonus chapters
now.
Is Rook is about Rook and Teddy and the moment when, yeah, he...
Okay, I need to get the physical copy. I will go get it. I will go get it this week, I promise. I promise. Because I was like, oh, just audiobook it. So, yeah, now there's things that I need to know. There's things that I need to read again. Yeah. So, bummer, I got to get this nice book.
Oh,
darn
yeah.
it.
The worst.
Thank you guys so much for listening. If you like this episode, please like and subscribe to our channel and follow us for the latest Goodish updates. And we'll catch you later.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.